Blog Talk Radio.
60 years professional and private stock investing experience. Two-time best-selling investment author. Developer of the world's most profitable stock timing systems, Sidney Tremaine is here to help you to take charge of your financial future. On your side, Sidney Tremaine.
Well, welcome everyone to this conversation. I am honored to be facilitating our first episode in the series Investments on Steroids with world-renowned financial expert, Mr. Sidney Tremaine. Mr. Sidney Tremaine was born, in England, where he lived for 26 years. He then spent the next 43 years in Canada and now lives in the mountain village of Panama. I doubt that Panama has ever seen the likes of Sidney's internet-enabled work edit and server utilization. He is a renowned expert in investment strategies and well known for explaining his systems, including in his three investment books, two of them bestsellers, of course, in a straightforward, easy to understand manner. Sidney founded Wealth Investors Limited in 2009 and is the Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 4 years, based on more than 50 years of professional and private investment experience, he has designed a unique and effective, profitable, long-term stock timing investment system. And because of this expertise, for those of you who were was honored enough to about 3 weeks ago to be on the show when Mr. Tremaine was our expert, you know that this gentleman knows his stuff. So it was my honor when I asked him whether or not he could do a monthly segment in order to educate my listeners, because this is the year when we need to make sound educational financial decisions. And the only way we can do that is when we have the facts. So without any further delay, I want to present to you my expert for this episode in the first series of Investments on Steroids. And the topic that Mr. Tremaine will be dealing with this evening, he will be speaking about the wrong choices and decisions that people are making when they think of investing. Mr. Tremaine, are you there?
I'm here, Daphne. Yes, thank you.
How are you?
And I'm well, and thank you for that extravagant introduction.
Well, exactly. That's who you are, you know, and I am very honored that you take the time to share your knowledge with people, because it's not that people does not want to make decisions. A lot of times they don't know how to. So I applaud and honor you for stepping up to the microphone and for helping us. So, go ahead.
I thought we should start with people who are novices to investing, or people who actually say, oh, horrors, that's a gambling casino. I don't want anything to do with that. I thought we'd start with those people.
That's wonderful, because, you know, people are so afraid. And the reason they are afraid is because They don't have the right information. And I'm so excited about when you presented the curriculum to me. I am already excited, and I know that the listeners are going to be blown away. So I just want people to know that they are to invite their friends to come. And the what I like about this is that they are going to be able, at the end of each series, they are going to be able to own the materials that you are teaching. So we want them to listen and take it, but whatever notes they miss, they need not worry, because they are going to get the opportunity to own these products. So I want to hand the microphone over to you. Where do the people who consider themselves novices, and that's a large percentage of the population, where do... Yes. We start. Where do we start with investment?
Well, I think that the majority of people make some serious mistakes when they avoid knowledge about investing in stocks. I'll tell you a little story.
Yes.
I live in a small mountain village about 20 miles from the Costa Rica border.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the last place you would expect to see a young Canadian man. I was at a service station one day, and somebody introduced himself, who obviously wasn't Panamanian, and it turned out he was from British Columbia in Canada.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he said, he asked me, "What do you do?" I told him. He said, "Oh, investments. Don't talk to me about that. My father just lost $1 million.
My Lord.
And so I found out fairly quickly that his father had been invested in gold mines, and just in gold mines. And of course, from that, I knew that he made a terrible mistake. He was in one industry, and gold hadn't been doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I honored the man's name was John. And I had honored John's request not to talk about stocks or investing. It was nothing that interested him, and that was fine with me.
Exactly.
But some months later, he started to want to know. He asked questions. And I can tell you that right now he is keen, when the time is right, and I keep telling him to wait. He's keen to invest his own money, and I will help him. But it's an example of somebody who thought that stocks were a terrible thing. His father, I understand, eventually made back the million that he lost. But he thought originally this was a terrible thing to stay away from. And now he's learned that there are ways to be in charge to a greater degree.
Yes, there's smart ways to make decisions, because we are making decisions each and every day of our lives. But it is important that we make the right decisions, and we can only make the right decisions when we have the right information. And this is why I'm so excited about the work that you are doing, and that you are taking the time to spend with us novices, so we can be sitting around the table in the conversation with the big boys as well.
You know, I personally think that making money from investments is the easiest way to make the money without working for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that a lot of people would argue with that. They would say it was very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the beginning, for me, it was. But I'm a stubborn sort of person, and over the years, when I lost money and I made it, I wanted to learn how to be right more often than I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
Mr. Tremaine, what sets your message apart from the everyday message that we hear from the stockbrokers and other investors out there? What sets your message apart from what we are accustomed to be hearing?
I think probably time. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is I've made all the mistakes, or most of the mistakes that anyone can make, but mm-hmm. I've done it over time. I've learned from the mistakes. I've been involved with investments for 60 years, which mm-hmm. is an awful long time to be involved.
That's right.
I am a very different investor today than I was in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
I took pot shots at things. I had hunches, or I heard rumors about things. I heard tips, and I followed them. And that is the worst thing anybody can do. Nobody can tell the future. I can't, and I don't know anyone else who can tell the future. But there are ways that you can control the future to some extent. And that's now what I do. You know, maybe folks would wonder, well, who the heck is this Tremaine guy, and why should I take any notice of him? Why, you know, what does he know what he's talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and rightfully so. Why should they?
If your listeners will forgive me, and you know very well that I hate talking about me, but
mm-hmm.
I think it's important that they know a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've already said that I've been involved both professionally and privately mm-hmm. as a stock investor for 60 years,
mm-hmm.
and that I've made all the mistakes. And mistakes are the things that you learn most from.
Exactly. They're lessons. Yes, yes. They're lessons.
My first amateur beginning was when a bank manager, I asked the bank manager, what should I invest in? And he told me, I have learned in the years since that bank managers typically know practically nothing about investing.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many of them as clients.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, in the years after that really terrible beginning, investments paid for an architect designed house on the ocean and a couple of cars, and I did very well.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually became the top broker in Eastern Canada after developing an investment system that averaged a little more than 22% for clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that I attracted an awful lot of clients.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew at that time, or eventually I knew, that that system could be improved. it had too many losses, even though it made just over 22%. It had a lot of losses. It traded far too actively. And it was not the sort of system that the average person should be involved with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In my time, I've also had two best-selling investment books. I think you mentioned that.
Yes.
I ran my own investment company with 23 employees several years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I had a software company that has developed literally a world-beating set of software. It times entry. You know, people say you can't time the stock market. That's poppycock. I have programs that time when to get in and when to get out, and one of them that does it so accurately it makes your hair stand on end. But,
and
that is
something
sorry.
That we don't normally hear. The other thing that floored me was the other day when you spoke about spreading, and I know you are going to be getting all of that. And I said to myself, this gentleman is speaking about something I've never heard any other investor speak about. You know, they always tell you, well, put so much in this one and that one, but I've never heard about spreading it out even. So you got my attention when you mentioned that, and, you know, this is the reason I know that those who are listening know you are at the right place at the right time.
You're talking about diversification, and I'm going to talk about in the next segment of this series.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, and
you know,
I like, although you write the books and everything, you have done it from the beginning. And what I think I was going to ask you to do right now, tell people about your first experience with investment and how much you started out with when you were back home. You were back home in England.
I was in England. I was in London. Mm-hmm. And I was very poor. I was rich in one sense. I had 20 whole pounds in a bank mm-hmm. account. Excuse me, I have to take a little drink.
Yeah, go ahead. Don't get drunk on the show now.
I had mm-hmm. 20 pounds in my bank account, and to me that was a lot of money. But, you know, it was in the head office of the Bank of Westminster Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, British banks, especially the head offices, were more or less like cathedrals. I don't know how high the ceiling was. The ceiling was wood. And inside was all polished wood and brass. And it was, as you stepped in the door, you almost felt you needed to whisper to people.
Ah,
I called the manager. Now, today, if you tried to call the manager of a bank, especially any major branch, you'd go through many gatekeepers first, and the manager would be very difficult for you to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I asked for the manager and immediately spoke with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, he was a very, very British-sounding man. Now, of course, he was British, but, I mean, he spoke in such refined tones. And I said, I have some money in your bank. I didn't tell him how much at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want to invest it. What can you advise me to do? And he said, he advised me to invest in a certain gold mine. It happened to be in South Africa. It was a small mine, and it wasn't listed in any of the, most of the British newspapers that showed what stock prices were. And so I had to buy a special newspaper that was kind of expensive to find out the price of this thing. So I said, well, look, would you please invest my entire amount of money that's in your bank? I think I still didn't tell him it was just 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, certainly, sir, in this very English voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he must have laughed himself silly when he found out how much money was involved.
Mm-hmm.
For the next month, I watched this stock go up a penny, go down a penny, do nothing, go up a penny, go down a penny, and this continued for the whole month. And I was going broke buying newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the month, when nothing had happened to this thing, no, I didn't lose, but nothing happened, and I was expecting that I was going to make my fortune with this thing. And I called him again, and I said, I'm sorry, but I don't think this stock is very good. Nothing's happening. Please sell my entire holding.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, sir. And that was the conversation. Certainly, sir. And
mm-hmm.
that was my first experience. Now, that is more amateur than anyone else that I've ever come across since. And I've come across some people who were absolute beginners, of course. But it was such a silly thing to do. You know, most people, if they were going to ask for advice, would at least ask a stockbroker, not a bank manager. I'm not sure that I even knew there were such things as stockbrokers in those days.
Right.
But anyway, so that was my first experience, and I mentioned a little while ago that I'm a stubborn person.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there were fortunes to be made from the stock market, and there are fortunes to lose. And I've done both. and you asked how I really learned all this stuff. Well, that's how. It's not just, I mean, obviously I had to take exams and do all sorts of things to become a stockbroker eventually. But I knew a lot about stocks way before then. And by experience.
I love your story, and I wanted you to share that because there are many people who are listening who has never done investment, and just the word investment frightens them because a lot of time people feel like investment is for the wealthy. However, investment is for all of us. There's people who have never done it, but it's never too late. And now here you are giving us the tools that we can use to make the right decision.
A lot of people are afraid of it. They think of it as gambling.
Mm-hmm.
They are afraid of the people in the industry. They feel that the little person gets the thin end of the stick or the sharp end of the stick, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
That there is something unpleasant and illegal about the industry, and I'll tell you why that is. And I'll tell you also at the same time why it is that a large majority of private investors lose money or make less than they should.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market averages between 10 and 11% and has done since 1928.
Mm.
So that's including the Great Depression, the recent Great Recession we went through, all the recessions between then, the wars that have gone on between them, the assassinations, all of the negative things that have happened in the world that have at times set the market back and caused losses. But overall, industry becomes more valuable almost automatically. Now, obviously, people are inventing things and finding more efficient ways to work and all of those things which help toward profits. But inflation alone will put up the price of stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Today, in these days, you know, the market is flirting with new highs again. And the reason is very simple. It is not because the economy is as strong as some people might like to tell you it is. I think there are major problems in the economy. It's because the Fed has been printing money and buying bonds. I mean, this quantitative easing business.
Mm-hmm.
And the more money they print, the more inflation there will be. There isn't strong inflation now. It's very weak. But in time, it will come. We will have inflation. We can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
When you devalue the value of money, you have to have inflation.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the information you are, the novices privy to, there are many people who have had access to this information over the years, because I know research has shown that during the times of recession, there are more millionaires that has emerged than any other time. So I have no doubt that exactly, you know, those are people who have had access to this kind of information and used it to their advantage, you know?
Yes.
So now is our time. It's our time to step up and take advantage of this is to us that is made available to us. If we have not, it's because we have not asked, and you didn't. My listeners did not even ask, and here we are presenting to them. So I just pray that people will be smart enough to take advantage of this, which is given to them. I want to ask you, over your many years, you have taught in different countries with different cultures and ethnic groups and gender and all of that.
Yes.
Which, when you look at the male-female gender, which one is more receptive to this kind of information that you are disseminating to us?
Normally, it's men. Mm-hmm. But I think that is a mistake. I think it mm-hmm. is a bad mistake, because mm-hmm. women tend to outlive men, and women ultimately tend to hold the purse strings mm-hmm. through insurance or deaths or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is vital that I think it's vital that both men and women find out as much as they can about investing, but investing safely. We'll touch on this in the next segment, but there are ways to ensure safe mm-hmm. Safety.
Right, safety. Yeah, because there are really some, there are really some assertive female investors out there that they'll wrap some of the male around their fingers, because the sisters, stuff together. There are some savvy sisters out there that knows this stuff. And, I know as we go week by week, you have many stories that you can share with the listeners.
I listened a few weeks ago to a woman who has made a fortune in options. Now, options is something I don't touch. I find them a little bit too dangerous. But mm-hmm. she has a method for dealing with options and has made millions and millions and millions of dollars.
That's right. She got rather information and used it.
Yes.
Get it and use it. So I am glad that you are here dispelling the myth of the fear and letting people know it is never too late.
I was talking to a lady within the past week. She is in Europe, and she's a widow.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband died 5.5 years ago, and mm-hmm. she has not enough money, in her opinion, to last for the rest of her life. And I think her opinion is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I am talking with her. Whether she will listen, I don't know, but I think she will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know. From where I sit now, I know that I can help this woman. And I know
Wonderful.
That I can help a lot of people, which I ultimately will do, of course.
Wonderful. And, that is so reassuring for people to hear that. Because a lot of times when they sit across the desk from these brokers,
mm-hmm.
nowhere in their hearts that they are thinking, I want to help you. They are thinking, I want to help my commission. And,
yes.
And,
you are right.
And people are sick and tired of that, and that's why a lot of people, they are putting their money under their mattresses, or they're putting them in pans and everything and put it away. Because of things like that.
I agree with you that the brokerage community is a greedy community. It
mm-hmm.
is in the business of money, and what it makes for itself is money.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it in the hopes that it's making you some, but
mm-hmm.
it will still make money if you lose. But having said that, there are some very honest, very client-protective brokers in the business. In any business, there are good people and bad people.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But one of the problems that the novice or the new investor has is that he or she is most likely going to finish up with somebody who is new in the business and really has no knowledge, no experience. And you either get what the sales manager has told the brokers that they should offer to their clients this week, or you get an inexperienced person's idea of what should be done. You can't learn this business from textbooks and exams. You cannot do it. We learn, when I was a broker, we learned all kinds of things that I never used again. It wasn't important, but I didn't learn, and I didn't see taught the behavior that one should have with a client. I spent a lot of time with my clients trying to teach them how to invest successfully. I didn't see anyone else doing that. And most very successful brokers, and I was very successful, most very successful brokers don't, or claim at least, that they don't have the time to do that.
Yeah,
I think
because
that was
they're
wrong.
They're off to the next big commission. That's their goal and focus. They're not looking to enhance the lives of the clients. They are looking to enhance their portfolio. So, and this is why, again, you know, I can't say it enough how pleased I am that this information came before me and that I, if I may say so myself, that I am smart enough to make it be available to my listeners because we need this information. Just like plants need oxygen and sunlight, we need this kind of information. So we can make the right decision. You know?
Yeah. Now, you might wonder why I am such a strong advocate of stocks. I've told you that I find it the easiest way of all to make money without working. I mean, that's what a lot of people would like to have, lots of money and no work. But I really have some proof, you know. excuse me, I have to have another drink.
I hope you're drinking water. I hope you're not drinking vodka and tonic.
I'm a good boy, you know. for now, Daphne.
Yes.
Okay. One of the pieces of proof that I have that investing in stocks is an excellent way to make money is in terms of a report from the St. Louis Federal Reserve Board.
Mm-hmm.
They keep track of what a person would make if in 1928, just before the beginning of the Great Depression and the years of terrible times for people, $100 was invested in 90-day treasury bills, another 100 in 10-year bonds, and another 100 in the stock market.
Yes.
And the treasury bills were turned over every 90 days into a new set of treasury bills.
Mm-hmm.
And the bonds, when they matured, were put into more 10-year bonds.
Yes.
Now, there's a little fallacy with some of this, but the mathematics are fine. The fallacy is this. You cannot invest $100 in bonds. The minimum you can invest is $1,000. However, let's go with what the Fed has done.
Right.
They calculated until last year, 2013, that the $100 that was invested in treasury bills was worth $1,972.72. That's in 85 years. Now, you've got taxation to come out of that because in theory you made a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, it seems to be in theory of 19 times, almost 20 times more than you had 85 years before. But inflation averaged 3%. So when you just deduct the inflation and you deduct taxation, you finish up with something less than $100 of purchasing power, equal to the $100 that you would have had in 1928. Mm. And, you know, I wanted to sort of get a handle on inflation.
And so that at that time, that was really not an educated decision that they make. If they had information, they could have done something differently.
Yes, they could. And we'll see what they did with stocks eventually. But one of the things that I wanted to do was try to fix inflation and see how that was in, what was $100 in 1928? Well, in 1928, you could have bought a brand new Ford Model A for as little as $385.
Oh.
Now, that was a lot of money in those days.
It was a lot
so
of
I
money in those
little.
Days. You were rich, yeah.
Now, if you wanted to have the same amount of purchasing power today, a new car, and Ford Model A was fairly small, a new car would have to cost $7,594.97. I don't know of any new car that you want to drive that costs that little.
That is inflation alone. I think, I want you not to lose the trend of thought there, but what just came to my mind is that a lot of times when we see those data presented, we are not taking into consideration inflation and all of that. So
That's right. We
are always getting excited over something that is really not worth being excited about. And this is why it is so important to have education and information about what it is that you best to do. So you can weigh your pros and cons about
you
what
know,
you want.
You know, 90-day treasury bills, 90-day
Please.
Treasury bills don't give you very much more than a bank account, a bank savings account. And to my mind, the most dangerous investment, I use the word investment deliberately, is a bank savings account because it loses both to inflation and to taxation in the same way that the treasury, the 90-day treasury bill does. I find that the most dangerous investment that you can possibly make. It's certain to lose purchasing power. Won't lose money, but it will lose purchasing power.
That's right.
The lady that I mentioned that I spoke about last week, she has a few hundred thousand, equal to a few hundred thousand dollars in a bank account because she doesn't know what she should do with it.
What to do, yeah.
And that's a terrible shame, and she knows it. She knew it
before. But it's a blessing. She's blessed that you came across her path before she sat with one of those sharks.
Well,
I'm
rewarded too, because if I can help her, you know, whether she's ever a client of mine or not, and I don't handle money these days, I just handle advice. But if she's ever a client of mine or not, I know I can help her anyhow. So
right.
We both gain.
Yes, it's the beauty about that. Yeah.
I mean, if she.
But
follows...
a lot of times they prey on those widows. You know, they prey on them because.
I have an experience of that. Mm-hmm. I had an experience like that, Daphne.
Mm-hmm.
In the firm that I was employed by at the time, one of the support staff. Knew the way I conducted business and brought a friend to me. And the friend had, I've forgotten where, she was beyond retirement age. She had, if I remember correctly, about $4,500. That's it. That's all. A week after her husband had died, she got a phone call from a young broker. She believed when she spoke to me that the broker had seen her husband's obituary in the newspaper and as a result of that had called her. And he put, I don't remember how much money she had once had.
Wow. Wow.
But he went through it. He lost money left, right, and center for her.
Yeah, because and his friend, they look on her during the state of mourning. Oh, my gosh.
In that case,
wow.
it was a sin. You know, it really was. And
right,
it
Lord.
Was a man who didn't know what he was doing on top of that.
Mm. And can
now
you imagine
people,
how many others that he probably did the same thing to? They just sit around and they buy the newspaper every day to prey on people like those. Because
my guess,
you know?
Daphne, is my guess and my hope is that he didn't last very long in the business.
Mm. That's a shame.
You know?
Even one person is one
yes.
too much.
Yes.
One
yes.
too many, you know? These
I mean,
things
that
are
woman
not supposed to happen.
That woman
not
then had a miserable retirement.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
She had a miserable
and, you know,
retirement as a result
there,
of that.
There are a lot of women out there that when their spouses are alive, they have no say, some of them by choice, that they have no say into the financial matters and they just leave everything up to their spouses.
A woman should not
God forbid.
Do that.
Yeah, and I tell my clients that I work with all the time, I said, you need to know what's happening and you need to teach your girls too and your sons so that when they get into relationships, they are not afraid of this kind of a conversation because it
you
is
know,
important.
I think, Daphne, there is another side to this, too. The male in the partnership often thinks he's being protective and takes charge of, you know, finances and looking after little wifey as he thinks of him.
Well, but they're doing more injustice than justice.
The real way of taking care would be to share the knowledge that he gains with his wife so that if she outlasts him, as is often the case, she is able to stand on her own feet and look after herself and not be prey to people who might
try
to take the money.
There are certain cultures that they include their children in these conversations. They don't wait until they're adults going out there in the world.
Yes, that's
they
right.
They grow up hearing this kind of a conversation, so because they're going out there to get spouses as well, so why not start them early so they are not caught from the blind side? We need to include them in this conversation.
I told you, Daphne, if I can continue with my little story a little bit, what happened to the 90-day treasury bills.
Mm-hmm.
But let me go on with this. Because there was another $100 put into 10-year treasury bonds, and they worked out to be a little bit better. Now, this $100, nothing was added to it. Nothing was changed. There was no management. It was a simple $100 put into each one of these three asset classes in 1928 and left alone. And the bonds, last year, the value, the end of 2013, the value of $100 in 10-year bonds was $6,295.79. And if you remember what I did with the cost of a car, it still, with inflation, wouldn't keep pace with that cost of the car that was $7,500 and change. So, and you've got taxation on top of that. Now, here is the bottom line as far as stocks are concerned. $100 put in stocks in 1928 was worth last year $255,553.31.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you could buy a few cars with that, you know. So no expertise was required. Having done that, nobody needed to know anything about what they were doing, just $100 in these three asset classes. And stocks were the ones that came out so well. I have a friend who thinks that real estate is the best investment, and he's got a bit of a problem right now, but so I'm not sure that he still feels the same way. But I asked, I came across something that Robert Shiller, the man who co-founded the Case-Shiller report that Standard & Poor's put out, it's about housing costs. And he said, if houses go up in value, they'll just make more of them. Now, he's talking about the building. He's not talking about the land, obviously.
The land, but, yeah, because the land is what
yeah.
is. The building depreciates, yeah.
That's exactly what he said. So he saw real estate, personal real estate anyway, as a very poor investment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So... out of that lot, that leaves stocks, and fortunately that's what I settled on. I have, you would think that at my age I'd have something to do with bonds. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite content with the stock market,
way
that I use it.
Based on what I'm hearing you say, at certain times or when you do it the right way. And you
yes.
focus on long term. You're not channeling people to go high risk, because especially
no.
that lady who is now a widow, you're not looking for her to go into high risk stuff. She needs to know that whatever she's doing is going to be there for her when she needs it, and she's getting something steady. I want to let you be aware that you have 13 minutes remaining in
okay.
this thing. But the beauty about it is that next Monday, same time, the people can come back for episode 2 of this. So you have 12 minutes and 40 seconds remaining.
Well, let me tell you why so many people lose money. It's because they invest by the seat of their pants. And I may touch on this next week, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they listen to
why don't you break that down for the listeners? You say they invest from the seat of their pants. Break that down for the listeners.
Well, people listen to what's on the radio, the television, in the newspapers. Well, it's not really the hype. You see, they wonder why on earth the stock market turns around and starts to head upwards quite dramatically, usually, and the worst time of a recession.
Mm-hmm.
The news is terrible. Main Street stores are being boarded up and, you know, factories are closing, people are out of work. It's a terrible time. There's no good news at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you listen to that, you think this has to be a silly time to invest, absolutely ridiculous. And at that time, people who have had stocks are bailing out in a hurry, hoping to
mm-hmm.
save the 50 cents on the dollar they still have left.
Mm-hmm.
What people don't know is that this is the time the institutions, the banks and the brokerage firms and, you know, the big money people are investing in stocks. They are picking up what everybody else is throwing away, because they look not at today's news. Today's news is old news in the stock market. They are looking 9 months ahead, and they're seeing sunshine. And because they see the sunshine, they're able to buy and fill their pockets with everything everybody else is throwing away. Now, what then happens, you know, those people who bailed out and lost money say, I'm never going back in the stock market. This is me. I'm finished. And then some considerable time later, like, for instance, now, they see new highs being made in the market, and they feel more comfortable about it, and the news about the economy is better. And, hey, this sounds like a good time to invest. But no, you know, as more people crowd in and push prices up, the institutions are quietly selling and you know, making the profit on the stocks they bought cheaply before. And the private investor is doing the buying, pushing the prices higher. And eventually, and we reach the top. And nobody knows it's the top. And they see it come down a bit, but they've seen that before. They see it come down some more. And then they pray, oh, God, if it would just go up $2, I'll get out then. Please let it go up $2 and make me some of my losses back again.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, it may come up $2. And they say, oh, good. No, this is heavy. I'm not getting out. It's going back up to new highs. Oops. And they panic and get out at the bottom. This is a fairly typical example of what happens and why people lose money. You cannot invest by the seat of your pants on what you think you know. You cannot do it. You must have a system that governs emotions, governs fear, governs greed, and allows you to be disciplined about your investing. That's really the bottom line. It's not what stocks you pick. It's how you manage the stocks you have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it called this system and this new lesson and trend that you are selling us on calls for patience and tolerance. Patience and tolerance. Patience and tolerance, because if you are someone who is eager to just move ahead, that's not the way to do it. You have to listen and know when to take
action.
That's
absolutely right. That's absolutely right. I will also tell you something else, Daphne. You have to have, as you said, tolerance. You have to have a bit of nerve, because I don't go in for short-term investing. I'm not going to get the rise and then get out for every little jig and jag. There are two or three what they call corrections of maybe 10 or 15% on the way up, and that's typical.
Mm-hmm.
I stay in for those, because if I don't, I will make less money in the long run. I don't mind losing short term if I know or I'm very confident that we're going up to greater highs afterwards. That's fine. But to try and get every little twist and turn, no. A lot of people try it, and they don't do very well.
And again, that's why the education is so important, because when you do this in an educated manner, you can be steady, because you know what you have, you can rely on it. So long
what
as you work it, it's like everything else. You get it, and you have to use the information you are getting to get the result that is required.
Once you are confident that the information is reliable.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who are willing to give tips and you know, guidance that may not have substance behind it.
Exactly.
You have to be careful of that.
That's right. So even when you sit with somebody, you too have to do your due diligence and go out there and find out and make sure whatever you are being told is in fact correct. Because a lot of it
boils down to trust, because if you're a novice, you don't have the experience to tell whether somebody else does have that experience. They might sound as if they do, but you can't be sure of it.
But you know something, Sydney? A lot of times if we listen to that little inner buzzer, it's telling us, but a lot of times we fight against that. And
mm-hmm.
then you hear,
yes.
If I had known. Yes, you know, because your heart were telling you, but you just fought against it.
Look, older people, and I suppose I qualify, are at a disadvantage, because their parents came up in the Great Depression. And that was a question of squeezing every dollar bill until it cried in pain. You know, a dollar bill was a fortune in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the children of those people have always been afraid of investing because their parents saw what happened before.
Right. So they were holding on for dear life. They were strangling the dollar bill by holding on to that. Well,
One thing you cannot do, Daphne, you cannot save for retirement from a paycheck. You have to do something with part of the paycheck so that the money earns more money. You can't do it with just a paycheck.
That's right. That's right. And like I, you know, people say, well, I'm not making enough money. Nobody makes money. We all earn it, and we have to be knowledgeable about the ways that we can earn money. Because unless we work at the mint, we're really not making money. We got to earn it, and we need to be creative. And, you know, as you so rightfully say, it's not going to come from our paycheck, so we need to be creative. All right, we are down to 3.5 minutes. Why don't you tell the people what you have for them next week?
Well, I've got...
In episode 2, what you're going to be talking about next week?
I've got 7 tips that are going to help to make money.
All right. So you all hear it. Make sure you come back next week and you bring somebody with you. And if you have never done investment, you know there is hopes for you. You have 3 minutes and 22 seconds. What do you want to tell? What do you want to leave the listeners with?
Well, Daphne, if I can do this, or you can, I'd like to tell them how they can learn more, where my website is and so on and so forth. That would be perhaps useful to some people.
You want to send them to the website before you finish the series?
Because why not?
They're going to go, and I think it is best if you give them the website at the end. This way they are open to learning. Because you have a lot of information there, and they're going to go there and get all flustered and confused. I like the way you are laying it out for them. This way they can digest. They have something to go work with this week. And at the end of each series, you point them to where they need to go.
Daphne, if they take just one thing out of each session, just one thing, they will be better off than they were at the beginning of the session.
Exactly.
And what I've really been trying to demonstrate in this segment is that people who stay away from stocks without understanding perhaps why, you have to understand something about stocks to be able to say, I want nothing to do with that, it's too dangerous. What they hear is a story from people who lose money, and a lot of people do lose money.
It's like somebody who got dumped, and you get your heart broken. You can't just block your heart out for love. You got to heal and grow. And investment is no different. Nobody's saying everything is going to be hunky dory, but if you learn from the experience, recoup so you can move ahead. Don't block your heart out for it. You seek the information.
The lady in Europe that I'm talking to, and I'm talking to her again tomorrow, she told me that her mother gave her 2 stocks at some point during her life, and they disappeared to nothing. They finished up valueless.
Yeah, you need to wind up because you only have 43 seconds, so you need to wind up this point. So you don't leave
them
hanging.
And yet she said she was willing to learn.
Exactly. Well, I tell you, this was an amazing first episode. I can't wait to see what is coming up each week. And I know people can sit down and they can take a deep breath because they know that there is hopes for them when it comes to investment.
I hope they don't just dismiss what they're hearing.
Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you next Monday. Have a blessed evening.
Okay, Daphne. Bye-bye now.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. So that was Mr. Sidney Tremaine, and as I say, he will be here for 4 more weeks, and then he's going to be here once a month. So you see, guys, this is good stuff. So we look forward to you joining this conversation each and every week. Have a blessed week, and start think about investing.